is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Crony capitalism. Veronique Durigy of the Mercatus Center is here to alert us to crony capitalism at work. That would be industrial policy in Europe. There is an industrial policy in the U.S. as well. And we speak of this momentarily before we move on to the results, the fruits of crony capitalism, which is trillions and trillions and trillions of debt in the federal capital. However, Veronica, very good evening to you. The Europeans have an industrial policy. It favors Airbus. The U.S. has an industrial policy. It favors Boeing. Is it that simple? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Yeah, it's pretty much that simple. And the way to think about them is like two different types of industrial policy. One, Airbus are arguably more expensive and more comprehensive because Airbus, the company itself, was born out of the idea of a consortium of government to create a company that would make commercial flights and that would be a competitor to the U.S. and to Boeing. But at the time, there were also two other companies, and McDouglas and Lockheed. And so they created Airbus, and they invested hundreds of billions of dollars, but also gave enormous advantages, implicit advantages like loans that did not need to be reimbursed until Airbus made a profit for a particular plane, all sorts of things. And as always, you know, the people who advocate industrial policy are happy to kind of point to Airbus as kind of a something created by the government, in large part, industrial policy that works. The problem is these arguments don't I mean, they're not. It's not that surprising that if you pour hundreds of billions of dollars repeatedly over decades for a company that has almost no competitor and where the product is also pushed by those governments onto other pretty captive audience, that you can have a company that not only survives but also is viable. The question is at what cost? What other resources were directed there? There was, as a result, a big trade war for 17 years between the U.S. and Europe. There was corruption. It's unclear that it's had a positive impact on either of the economies of governments who've subsidized this. I mean, Europe is just dragging and has been for years, and manufacturing employment has gone down quite dramatically in Europe as it has in the U.S. So it's competing model. They're different, and it's expensive and just not that efficient. That's all I will say, I guess.
Well, we'll move to the U.S. Now, we have a free enterprise system. Everybody competes, except Boeing. I've learned from you the Export-Import Bank, which was vouchsafed by Joseph Stalin. It's been around a while. Favors Boeing, but so does, most recently, according to your reporting, the Biden administration. In fact, the president of the United States ballyhooed the sale of 200 Boeing aircraft to India. Is this our industrial policy? We claim it's free enterprise, but in fact, we're putting our finger on the scale.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of finger on the scale put, especially when it comes to Boeing. As you know, and obviously you reminded us, Boeing has been one of the main benefactor of the Export-Import Bank, which is a credit agency. But also Boeing gets enormous amount of tax and local tax credit, state and local tax credit, sorry. And do you remember, I think it was in 2013 or 2014 when President Obama was giving a speech at the Boeing factory and was asking was saying that he should be getting a gold watch for all the planes that he's been selling. That's the thing about commercial aircraft. For whatever reason, they believe that there's and maybe it is the case, that there's a geopolitical role. And so the government is massively invested in it, pushing those planes onto onto other countries and during meetings with other governments saying, how about you buy some Boeing planes and we can talk later? But the Europeans, in all fairness, do the same thing. So it's why I'd say it's two competing model of industrial policy. And
the result of the industrial policy is we spend more money that we don't have. And we'll just tag here because this will go on for weeks and months. And if it's resolved, it'll be sometime in the summer. This is called the debt ceiling. But in fact, it's both parties refusing to do what is necessary to reduce the size of the deficit. The Republicans have now brought forward something that they've passed just barely, 217 to 215 in the House of Representatives. They call it Limit, Save, Grow Act of 2023, waiting for President Biden to respond. However, Veronique, following your reporting at the National Review, they're not limiting anything, they're not saving anything, and they're not growing anything. So again, we've been misled. Do the Republicans sincerely believe that this is the way forward to spend more money and to find marginal savings, kind of like pennies around the edge? Do they think this is the future?
I don't know if they think this is a future, but I mean, to be fair to them, they're controlling in the scale of 10 years the growth of spending by over $400 trillion. That doesn't mean they're cutting $4 trillion into the growth of spending. It doesn't mean they're cutting in nominal term $4 trillion. But it still means that we're going to be spending an enormous amount of money that we don't have. I don't think they had much choice. First, they have a very small majority. But also, if they wanted to be very serious, if anyone, them or Democrats, wanted to be serious about the fiscal situation we face, you and I have talked about this many, many times. Entitlements need to be on the table. And the problem about entitlement spending reform is like it's going to, you need to have a plan. You have to have been willing to think about it. You need to, and it only will pass in a bipartisan manner. So they weren't, it was never going to be serious in terms of making a true impact on the debt. And so for what they have, in the end, it's not that bad. It's small. It's not going to make a difference. It's small, but it's at least kind of starting to engage in having a conversation about the debt.
Well, wait a minute. Now, you reported that they're claiming canceling unused COVID-19 money, $60 billion, is savings. That's foolishness.
Well, I mean, it's good budget hygiene, let's put it this way. I mean, that money was going to go away. That's, you know, it's like they wanted to be sure the Democrats couldn't use and redirect it for something else. Okay. Okay. But then they want to go back. They want to go back to the 2022 level. So that means getting rid of a fair amount of tax credits, first getting rid of the 10% increase in discretionary spending that we've seen pass in the last budget. But it's still okay. If they had wanted to make more a little bit more of a difference, they would have gone back to 2019 before the pandemic.
Veronique Tiburcini of the Mercatus Center, Industrial Policy in America and in Europe. I'm John Bradley.